Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everyone. I am not your host today. I'm just the introducer. This episode is a recording of a panel discussion we had at Sunstone Birmingham about a month ago, where we brought together people who have had very different faith journeys within the LDS Church. Some of them have stayed, some of them have left, some are relatively young, while others have a lot more life experience. And all of them have sacrificed a lot for their journeys. So, without further ado, here's our panel discussion from Sunstone Birmingham.
Hello and welcome to everyone. Thank you for joining. This is the second session of UK Sunstone 2020, and this is the panel discussion. My name is Mark Johnson. I'm from Glossop in Derbyshire. I know we've got a really good selection of people across the faith spectrum from one end to the other. So today we're going to be hearing from Deborah Squires-Coleman, who's from Essex. She's got a mother of five children and she's got 12 grandchildren. She was retired, but she did work in education. So now she spends her time babysitting, reading and walking. So that's Deborah Squires-Coleman, and she'll be first. We've got Deborah Edwards, mother of three children, retired teacher and family worker. She's also famous for being the co-founder of, the longest running and greatest post-Mormon Facebook group for the UK people, UK former LDS. I help her with that a little bit as well. So she's got a really unique perspective on faith, seeing all the people come and go in that group over the years. And I'm not sure how many years it's been running, but it feels like a long time. It's been really helpful for people. We've also got Mike Lake, 52, from Warsaw. He's been married for 33 years, father of three, worked for the LDS church office in Solihull when it was there. He's was born into the faith and was a member of the LDS faith for 46 years. His interests include IT, art, psychology, and religious theology. So that should be interesting to hear from him. And last but not least, we've also got Lauren Richardson Alcock, lives in Newcastle on Tyne, recently married to Andy 10 days before lockdown. Well done for that. She's a translator in the legal sector, loves playing board games, Dungeons and Dragons with friends, wrestling and doing wrestling training, and she also owned a bakery and loves to cook. So with that, let's start. The brief for the panel discussion today is really to allow everyone to share their faith journey, their current position. We've said about 10 minutes each for everyone. So with that said, the order will be Deborah Squires-Coleman, Deborah Edwards, Mike Lake, and Lauren Richardson-Alcock. So that'll be the order. So let's kick off with Deborah Squires-Coleman, and thank you. I'll take it away, Deborah.
I joined the Church of the Long Name, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, when I was about 17 years old, and was pretty solid cultural and what we call covenant-keeping member. And even when my extended family began to have doubts about the truth claims, I managed to keep going, and I'm pretty solid in my faith. I think if I had to pinpoint a period of time when my questions became a bit deeper, it was when my children left home and I retired and went on a mission with my husband. And I suppose I had more time for study and thinking. And over the years, because I'm still church attending, I still go to the church every Sunday. And over the years, at times, I've been asked by younger sisters how I remain church attending and believing when there are lots of things in the church that I disagree with and that I recognise cause me and some of my brothers and sisters some pain. My answer to that is I don't totally know, but I have some ideas of how I do manage to work through it. What works for me doesn't work for anybody else. And to be honest, the way I work through it might not work for me in a few years' time. I might have to find other ways of navigating my faith. I know that a lot of people have mentioned to me shelves, and I know Brother Hamer mentioned shelves earlier on. And some people put like doctrinal issues or history or cultural expectations on the shelves. I think if I had a shelf, it would have broken by now. I think my coping mechanism is different. The only way I can describe it is I let my questions and my beliefs and my ideas kind of float freely around me, like bubbles, I suppose. Bubbles of questions, bubbles of ideas, and they're all separate. And times when I'm curious or I need to revisit anything, I just kind of pluck one of these bubbles out of the air and reintroduce it to what I call my adventure of faith, my discovery of faith. And maybe that's why I'm able to sometimes hold conflicting information and ideas at the same time. So, for example, in this hand, I might be able to hold the idea that Joseph Smith sometimes used manipulation or fear, and I can think that polygamy was not of God. But yet in this hand, I can hold him to be a prophet and a person who had vision and ideas of connection and good, and of Godhood. And I can comfortably hold those two ideas. It's not always easy, but and sometimes a bubble might burst and there's some reconstructing I have to do. But this method helps me to process my thoughts. It gives me time to process my thoughts and ideas. And that's why I call it an adventure, a journey of faith adventure and faith discovery. And it's been actually quite exciting for me. I don't really call it a crisis because I've never come to the point where I've had to make a big decision about my faith, about leaving or staying in the church. I no longer feel that I have to know everything, probably partly as you get older, you kind of figure that out for yourself. There's a couple of things that are constant to me and that are very important. That's the need for God in my life and the joy that following Christ brings. They're two constants. But some things, whether the Book of Mormon is literal, if it came about by inspiration or translation, doesn't loom large in my thinking or my learning. I rarely pluck that bubble down. Believing the Book of Mormon is scripture is good enough for me at the moment, and it inspires me. And so that's where I would go with some of the things that may have caused me problems in the past, but I've kind of resolved them and they're just sort of hanging there in the air. Many other things I said I don't know as I once did, but that's okay, because I think belief and hope plays a bigger part of my life than it once did. And to be honest, the not knowing has given me so much freedom to go places with my thinking and to explore. As I said, that's been really exciting for me. I have a strong belief in revelation, and I believe that the restoration continues. So this allows me to have, as I said, a lot of hope. I have hope that there will be changes in the church. And as I said, I don't always agree with the church leaders, but believing in continuing restoration gives me the space to question and seek my own answers. I'm not so sure the changes I would like to see happen will happen in my lifetime, but I do see movement, and the hope of more movement really grounds me into the church. Something that's really been really important to me over the last few years, and something that I'm getting to know a bit more and using my life a bit more, is grace. I'm still very much discovering its power, but as I come to understand it more, it's freed me to be kinder to myself, gentler with myself. I'm gaining a dependency of it, or a knowledge of that dependency. And friends have been really graceful, or given me grace, and they've shown me love and support. In all my questioning and my wanderings, they've been there, and that's been kind, and I've learned a lot from that. And also because I feel of this grace, I want to give it as well. And so I'm learning to give it to others, especially the general leadership. I don't understand why things are done the way they are. I can give them grace that they're learning to. And that's really important to me, because I can't expect anything for myself that I'm not willing to give out to others. I'm really appreciative of all the things that the LDS Church has given me and taught me. It's taught me about love, Christ's love in particular. And that's a strong anchor for me. When I met my husband, Kevin, we met each other when he was about 19 or 20, and he wasn't a member. And I introduced him to the church. And I'm very mindful that my evolving ideas and beliefs have at times unnerved him. I suppose I'd call him a traditional Mormon. But I think he's getting used to it, and I don't think he feels the fear, because I think when people's ideas change and we're learning new things and we're finding more things out about our faith and what we do believe and what we don't believe, I think it can be frightening to those close to us. So I found it important to talk to Kevin about things I'm believing. And sometimes in the early days, it was in a way that wouldn't scare him too much. I didn't want him to think that I was going anywhere. I was just rediscovering or discovering things that were important in my life. To be honest, he anchors me, and his stability gives me a kind of security to wander and discover things, because I know where he's always going to be, and that's very reassuring. And his enthusiasm for the temple and the Book of Mormon does infect me, and I'm really grateful that his faith might be a bit different to mine, or his beliefs, I should say, might be a bit different to mine, but I'm really grateful for them. To be honest, I think I'd be totally shattered if he ever decided to leave the church. I've also discovered that I am where I need to be, and I received a witness that I should be in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's my place. I'm very lucky to be in a ward where I feel loved and accepted. And I'm sure that at times, especially in a relief sighting meeting or something, somebody will say, oh, there's Debbie, she's off on one again. And I kind of have come to accept that. You kind of have to accept that if you put yourself out there with ideas, that there's going to be some pushback or some people are not going to agree with you. And I'm kind of strong enough to take that. But I feel the love of my members, you know, my fellow members as well. And they've had patience with me, and I'm grateful for that. I'm on the State Relief Society presidency, and it's a really wonderful fit for me. I love being there. I love being with the sisters. I have a deep love for them and appreciation, and they've taught me to be vulnerable and authentic, and that's helped me, actually. To be authentic has actually helped me to find my place in the church, because people feel that they know what they're getting, and they support me. Also, being on Relief Society presidency obviously gives me a voice, which I need. It's my home, and it's a place I love. And the love and the sacrifice and the pain that I've witnessed from people, particularly the sisters in the church, has helped me to find God. I kind of find God in their strength and God in their bravery and God in their faith. And it's been a wonderful journey. No two people have the same journey, and but it's important to be open. It's important to ask questions of each other, and it's important to accept each other's journey, and that we're all different and we all manage in our own way.
Thank you, Deborah. So we've got Deborah Edwards now.
So my name's Deborah Edwards, and I'm currently living in North Somerset, but I am a northern wench, as somebody once described me to my husband. I was a member of the church for 35 years. I joined in 1976, partly due to the Osmonds, which I'm not ashamed to say, but also we had a family member who used to be a member of the church, a family friend rather, and he told me about it and gave me my first Book of Mormon. I was raised as a Catholic, and not very strict. I think I was more influenced by the school than my parents, really. So I'd always had a faith in God and a faith in Christ. And I was always very interested in religion. And I studied theology when I was teacher training as well, and taught religious studies for many years. I served a mission in the England Coventry Mission, 1982 to 84, and it was the best of times and the worst of times. I was very active in the church, and I loved the church. I loved its teachings, I loved the way it was organised, I served in many, many callings. I tried to keep the standards as best I could, although not perfectly. I loved going to the temple. I was an avid and still am family historian. And I married in the temple in April 1988 to a convert who joined the church about a year before me, my husband Martin. So our life very much revolved around the church. It was a very, very busy time, busy 35 years, especially when we were married with young children. You know, we tried to do the whole family home evening, family prayer, family scripture study as much as we could. And you know, that it was our life. I loved member missionary work. I tried to share with my friends, much to their annoyance, as much as I could, without much success. And then my shelf was beginning to wobble. My shelf wobbled at the very beginning when I joined the church, really, when I found out about the blacks and the priesthood. I tried to explain it away, even on my mission, even when it was restored. I still niggled me for many, many, many years. And another wobble on my shelf was my self-esteem. I never, ever felt good enough or worthy enough. And I really struggled with that for many years. And then when I had a friend called Judith in Texas who rang me in some distress, having found out about some things about Joseph Smith and particularly polyandry. Now, some of the stuff I had heard of before, but I'd never heard of polyandry before. And at first I was, oh, I've got to be careful, you know, Satan's tempting me here. But because I'd been struggling for so long, we'd never been good enough. Had I begun to think, well, is this really true? Why am I still feeling this way years and years later? I began to take it seriously. And here I am today. I really enjoyed Deborah's talk then. It really, I mean, a lot of admiration for that. And that was me for many, many years. I put lots of things on my shelf and explained it away. I was that person who was the awkward one in Relief Society, would ask the awkward questions or try to give an alternative viewpoint. That didn't always go down very well. And then in 2011, when I found out more about the history of the church and I sat down and spoke with my husband about it, he told me that he had actually not believed it for many years anyway, but he was going to keep me happy. And I'd been going really the last few months to keep him happy. And that led us both onto us leaving the church, because I'm an all or nothing person. And I tried to stick it out for a bit longer, but it just didn't sit right with me. And so we both knelt down and prayed, and we didn't have a vision as such, but we just felt it was okay to go. We just felt at peace within ourselves. And then sadly, my husband passed away from cancer just 9 months later. But that 9 months, we were the closest we'd been for a long time, because there was no judgment, there was no striving to be this eternal family. Our three children had already left the church, or had gone less up. My daughter was very outspoken and we clashed a few times. She still finds it difficult at times, but I tried to say that was the best I knew at that time. And my two sons have left as well. All took our news in different ways. Anne-Marie was like, yep, told you so. Peter thought it was hilarious. And my son was like, my other son was like, well, that's what you do. This is what you are. But now, you know, it has become a family story, really. As for faith, that's been a challenge for me. I've gone from being very faithful and believing in God and believing in Christ and feeling lots of grace to not believing anymore. It was virtually within weeks of us leaving the church, really. I tried to keep that going for a while, but after my husband died, although that wasn't the trigger, but certainly after my husband died, there was I remember a few days later, there was a news article, children had been found murdered in Syria, and it was horrific. Thinking, gosh, if this is, you know, if this is how God is with his children, I just felt then there is no God. And I'd heard of other things before over the years, but I think because I was on that journey, that did it for me. I often say, I don't know who was more surprised, me or God. I do think that as humans, we're too special, and our spiritual part, our being, is too powerful to die at birth, at death. So I do feel that there is, we are around, and that power lives on. And so I did what every good ex-Mormon does. I posted on Facebook a few rants that lost me a few friends. I'm not do that as much now. I started a blog and I set up a Facebook group because I myself wanted to meet with and be with other people who were on the same journey. And I'd already connected with a few friends already. And it's been good. You know, we've had some real interesting moments on the group. We've had some meetups, not as many as I'd like. But then again, I always think, well, we've been so busy for 35 years. We're just tired of organising things. So they're quite impromptu, really. We've seen people come, wavering. Many of them have left the church. And then we've seen them go because they don't feel they need that support anymore. So that's something which has been good to see, really. And there's about 470-something members on the group. Not all active, we have about 100 that are quite active, as in active on the group. But reconstructing Zion in my life has been about loving myself again. And I'm very fiercely protective of my self-esteem. And I think grace for me comes from being kind and being wary and needful of people's needs, especially within our family. I found I've had a greater appreciation of nature. You know, exactly. So when I left the church, that the world became brighter. Although for times I was doubtful of authority, still am a bit really, but the world became brighter and clearer. My mind was lighter and I was able to see things a lot clearer. Some of the friends I've had in church are still very, very good friends and very tolerant of me. And I've lost some people I thought were good friends as well. But we've got through that and we've made some new friends. Life has been different because I lost my faith and my husband within a year. And that's been had its own challenges, but it has been an adventure. And I think, you know, it's working towards tolerance and acceptance. I've come a long way in what I realise now were my personal prejudices. I've come a long way in that. And I surprise myself sometimes. But I think these kind of get-togethers online or physically are supportive. I still read a few things. I'm still interested in it. You know, they always say, you know, you can't leave the church. But I think after 35 years, especially during some very formative years, it doesn't just leave you. You know, it's still part of me. And there's some practice that I still continue to do that I think, oh, that's a Mormon way of thinking, but that's okay. That was an okay thing. If the church changed its ways, would I go back? Probably not. At the first time I thought I would do, but I really admire people who choose to stay and change from within. I really admire that. I think it's going to be another generation. And Lindsay, I listened to your polygamy podcast recently after not having time to listen to them much. Fascinating. So I think it's about really just reconstructing Zion within our hearts, isn't it? You know, the pure in heart, and with our families and creating that sense of peace and community. And that's all I have to say at the moment. Thank you.
Now, I know that being stuck in your house all day, you're looking for some good to do in the world. Might I suggest using a few of those precious minutes donating to Sunstone? Donations are pretty much our entire income stream. They are our lifeblood, even during times of plague and earthquakes. Head over to sunstone.org/donate to let the world know that there really is more than one way to Mormon. And if you donate enough, I'll give you the address to my secret underground bunker, where we can swim through an entire Costco's worth of toilet paper.
Hello, yes, Mike from Walsall. My story is slightly different. From my point of view, I was, Mormonism was my total life. My parents loved the church. My father actually had to give up his career to join the church. He was working for the Ministry of Defence and Engineering. I was born in the Covenant. I've known nothing but the Mormon faith for most of my life. And as said, I was there for 46 years. It's been a bit of an adventure in terms of what happened with that. Like many people growing up in the church in the United Kingdom, life was hard. The biggest problem is probably the schooling. Although I grew up in Lichfield primarily, which at the time was the stake centre, and had the UK offices actually based in Lichfield at St John Street for a while. School-wise, we were probably less than well under 1% of the population. So we were constantly sort of ridiculed, bullied, taunted, and myself and many other children growing up had quite a difficult time. But we did our best in trying to stick up for the faith, preserve the faith. You know, I used to use sporting events and what have you, and some success in shooting when I was shooting for the country to actually advertise the church in the paper and stuff. In terms of my life, I still had a faith crisis when I was about 14. Predominantly, I was dragged by my parents to church for a spell. And eventually, I had to find out for myself, to which I prayed and I did something down and asked for a sign, and the Lord did actually give me the sign, so that did work out. I still struggled with some of the demands. We'd have a lot of, it was down to some like seminary, early morning seminary and stuff, and the young men's programs on top of the shooting practice, on top of all the homework, and wanted to spend time with the family. So life as a child was quite demanding in that sense. My father was well into the church. He used to stay up at times into the early hours of the morning having theoretical discussions and being taught doctrinal things. He was a high priest. But the biggest problem for me is probably on leaving school, I was asked to give up my friends who were non-members. The parents' words that they might lead me astray. It became very polarised. My life became very polarised. It was church or the world or whatever. Everything was cut, and that caused a few problems in development later on in terms of actually settling and not really knowing how to relate to people not of the faith in work and what have you. My wife was a convert. I actually baptized her myself, and she had a very, very hard time of both coming into the Mormon church a little bit, but with her family. Her family were anti-LDS. We had over 20 odd years of persecution in terms of quite a few sections of the family stirring, causing trouble and what have you. Well, she was thrown out. She was thrown out of her home just before we got married. And for, you know, so for this 20 odd years, we had this problem with persecution, and she didn't really have a relationship with her mother and father anymore. That was difficult, and both of them have since passed away, with that never really being totally resolved. As I said, I did work for the church office for a while, and a couple of times I've done some work for them. Beautiful people. The church does an awful lot to actually help its community. Just my wife and I spent about 5-6 years in employment services, part-time missionaries helping people find work and training and stuff. But what did it for me was just towards the end of that spell in as a church missionary. I went back to university, wanted to learn psychology, under Professor Matlow, who's one of the UK experts in rational thinking. And something was said at church, in the priesthood, out in the culture hall, where they're discussing Joseph Smith's martyrdom. And it's one of those sort of ping moments where you've been taught to look for the critical thinking and you think this doesn't add up. And that got me wondering. So I went home, looked it up the way I've been trained to actually be sort of impartial and get given the evidence. And that opened the rabbit's warren. That was one of those matrix moments of which pill do you take? It became quite apparent that they were wrong on the history of Cartridge Jail. At that point, it's as if I want to know more as to what else was wrong, or and I made a mistake of sort of at the time sort of saying yes, okay, I'm going to dig deeper. So I crashed out of university. This was my whole world gone. I'd been a member for over four decades. And spent the next 4 months, 12, 14 hours a day, researching the LDS theory. It was difficult because I even lost the definition of who was God. And there's a lot of soul searching and praying. Funny enough, I was guided to a show that night. Just worked out that there's something called Heart of the Matter, Sean McCraney. At the time, he's an ex-LDS and he's a minister. And that very week, the show was God Part One. So that was wonderful. So I started following his show for a while. That proved to be a real godsend and blessing because of the research he used to do with Sandra Tanner. And they actually form a lot of the foundational research on the differences. And I went to help out with the website years later. So I was given some of the resource material as well. So it's quite informative. What I found was when I handed my letter in to resign from the church, within 2 months I went really ill, almost suicidally depressed. It was big changes. And as it worked out, again, I found that by coincidence, this one night when I was really up against it, a show was changed, no reason for it. And it was to The Cost of Being a Truth Seeker, done by Sean McCraney on that. And that was brilliant because it suddenly reminded me of how much I was glad initially to have got free of the lies and the cons and not being manipulated. And then as a witness at the end of this show, because the phones were quiet, they actually read out an email, and one of the last emails was mine from a former time when I was actually thanking Sean for helping sort of set me free. I visited a few Christian churches, struggled with those. The first song that I actually ever heard in a Christian church was Amazing Grace to a full band, and it was beautiful. And My Chains Are Gone as a part of a subsection of that. Went to Bible college, met a reverend there down the road. We go, you know, he's one of the pastors to this day. Just seen so many coincidences. What I would say is, for me, there's been as many miraculous events outside the church as there were inside. I'm still seeing the blessings. I'm still seeing the coincidences, you know, how things line up, how things happen. And I feel very fortunate because I've had access, unlike many, to a lot of the Fragden research and things. Even talking to Mormons is based a lot on Sean's work. And the reverend's friend in Litchfield is a fantastic individual who took us under the wing. He put up with my writing almost mini books, taking Christian theology and whatever your part and comparing it, looking for the truth. And there are some good people out there who really helped make a transition. I remember writing a letter to the church, and I almost got in front of me, where it was more or less asking them to change, to become more Christ-like, to fix some of these errors. Because my problem was, as a priesthood holder, how can I lie to a kid? How can I know that these things are not right and mislead people? And I just had a crash of, you cannot, I just could not do that and count myself worthy. So I felt in an impossible situation, and the only thing really to do was to leave. In the meantime, it's worked out. I've been blessed. Doors have opened. I'm a member of two churches. There's some great organisations. I normally tend to work with non-denominational organisations. And my wife was glad to be free in the end. We spoke a little while ago. She was the Relief Society president when all this was going on. And we talked and we kept her informed. She came out with me. And she was saying after 20-odd years, she was glad to be free. She found it very difficult in terms of the demands from the church. And from my point of view, would I change anything now? I just wish I hadn't put her through it. From my point, you know, I've still got a fractured jaw from being a kid and getting hit in the jaw, defending church and truths, which now the church actually disowned and rewritten. My wife lost her family. She never actually got to know and reconcile with her mother before she died. And we have children who have been injured and harmed from the church and family which have been lost. So for me, it's about the truth and the relationship with God individually. I think everyone has their own journey. I think we see it in their lives where things line up at times. Like for me, my son who served a mission got sent home and with heart problems. He's happy where he is now. My wife's happy. My son's still, one son's still active Mormon. He's disabled. And I take him to church, into the LDS church from time to time. There's no problem. There's great people down there in the LDS church. We still talk. I think the love of the people carries on. And it is about love, and it is about a relationship and a path and finding your own way. And there needs to be a lot of tolerance in terms of letting people find their own way. But all three of my sons are at home at the moment still, although they're almost in the 30s. And we have somebody who's almost a non-believer, active Mormon, active Christian, sort of somebody who's Christian but in their own way. And we all get on. We're happy. We work. We're a community, and it can be done. You know, at the end of the day, it's about the love for the Lord and others. So I'd leave it like that, but say, don't fall for the cons that everything is gone, that you can only get to heaven through the LDS church. In fact, even doctrinally, if you look at it, Jesus and his disciples were Jews. They weren't LDS. They weren't even Christians. So there is an element of look for the truth and be who you really are. And that's what I'd like to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks much. Appreciated. Lauren, are you okay to?
I was born into the church. I was born in Sunderland Stake in the north of England. And at the time of my birth, both my parents were Mormons. My mum had joined early 70s. She denies it has anything to do with the Osmonds. I respectfully don't believe her at all, but she, I think it was the early 80s, she began dating my dad, and my dad converted. None of my siblings, my father had children, I'm my parents' only child, but none of my siblings converted, so it was the nuclear family of me, my mum, my dad. I grew up in the church. I was enthusiastic about it. My mum says I actually used to stop people on the street and talk to them about it because it was everything I'd known growing up. It was very much a part of my life. I was baptized when I was 8, and a week after I was baptized, my father left the church because I found out in much later life that he'd only hung around to baptize me, and then he left, and my parents divorced, I think, 2 years later. So I grew up very much believing in the church, but at the same time being, I don't want to say as a second class citizen, but my family was looked down on because we didn't have an active priesthood member, that it was just me and my mum, that my mum was encouraged to remarry, and she said, no, I don't feel that's the right path for me. And because we didn't have a priesthood holder in the home, because we didn't have the typical Mormon family, our ward was very dismissive to us, that when callings were extended, when, for example, my mum's best friend was called as the Relief Society president, and she was asked who she would like her counsellors to be, and she named my mum, and they went, oh no, we don't think that's the right influence. So from being a teenager, I always felt like I wasn't afforded an actual place at the table because I didn't come from a stereotypically Mormon family. Now, through my teenage years, I was incredibly active in the church. Any activity, any church thing, any fireside, etc., I would be there. I would have opinions. I was never one to sit back. I'd done research on my own. I was interested in the religion I'd given my life to. And most of my friends were church members. I spent most of my time with them. And it all came to a head when I was about 18, because I had some friends who were leaving at the time. And something my mum has taught me, but it is one of my own creeds as well, is I don't have to love someone for being a Mormon. I don't have to love someone for... I don't have to love them for their beliefs. I just have to love them for who they are. And a few of my friends who were leaving had their own struggles, like very much across the spectrum, from like serious addiction to just wanting freedom. I loved them as they were. I was still happy to be their friend. I was still happy to have their part in my life. I would still say to them, like, would you like to come to church? Like, are you interested in coming along? Like, we've got this thing going on in like young women's. I would try and encourage them back. But because I didn't turn away from those friends, I was told to my face by my bishop when I was 18 that I was a bad influence, that because I couldn't convince them to come back to church, and because I chose to be associated with them anyway, that I was a disgrace, that I was a bad influence, and that I really wasn't representative of the church. And I thought this was unfair because at this point, I'd done nothing wrong. I had just stood by some friends. So between the ages of 18 and 20, I left the church myself because I knew I couldn't live under that kind of leadership. I couldn't live in a church where, like, I followed a saviour who taught that one of the greatest commandments was to love your neighbour as yourself, and to have extended the love that I had felt from him to other people, to then be told that I was wrong. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand where the love was coming from. I didn't understand how they could almost say to not love my fellow being, to not stand and... I can't actually remember the scripture, it's been that long since I've opened them, but it's something that, like, to lift the hands that hang down. I genuinely believe that was one of the greatest commandments that I've been taught, was to love my fellow being, like, because in as much as you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren. And that started the path where I fell away, as I said, for 2 years. In the meantime, I'd moved to York Stake. I had attended church a few times. I more went to institute because I had friends in the YSA program and they were all at institute in Leeds. I went to institute more, and slowly through other people's influence, I went back to church more. The bishop in York Ward, I was in York 2, remains one of the greatest men I've ever known because he saw the humanity inside of the church. He saw that we were humans who would fail, that we were not supposed to be perfect. And his influence kept me in the church for about 3 years more because he was such a good man that I went to him with my questions. I had begun to investigate the background of the LDS church because I'd been approached with questions by other friends who had met through university who had done their own research on the Mormon Church, and I knew about some of the policies. I knew about the policy of not extending the priesthood to Black members. I knew about certain things, but I didn't really understand the impact of them. I just knew that it was a church policy. So I began to look into it, and as I began to look into it, I was more and more horrified that this was a church that was supposed to have the absolute fullness of the truth, and yet was sitting on so many concealed things and were basically misleading their members. That I went to this bishop, and I went to him with my questions, and he preceded our entire discussion by saying, "I'm a man. I don't know the whys. I don't know the reasons. I only know the church's policies. I only know what I've discussed with the Lord." And as I said, he is one of the greatest of men, because he never made me feel like I was delving into something that would harm my faith, anything like that. I more felt that as I talked to him, he was trying to say, "I believe this, I believe that, these are the facts that I have, it's for you to go forwards." Then I moved back to Sunderland Stake for 2 years, tried to continue my discussions with the bishop up there, who once again put his foot down and said that the things I was looking into, the only word I can really ascribe to it is almost heretical, because he was saying that the things I was discovering were things that were not beneficial to the church, that trying to discover the truth had no place in this, and that for me to look into it indicated that I had absolutely no testimony, that I had been fooling him, I'd been fooling everyone else, that I would have to answer to the Lord for the fact that I didn't believe these things. I had never once said that I didn't believe it. I believed it with so much of myself. I didn't believe in the attitudes that I'd received or the fact that the information had been hidden. And to hark back to Deborah, she was talking about shelves. Now, I had propped mine up hugely by saying, "Well, no, I've been to the temple, I know these things, I've had these experiences, etc., etc." And I almost tried to convince myself that a different era brought different mindsets. And that was how I was trying to explain away so many of the problems that I was finding, until the one that broke my shelf, to use a very common phrase, was the discovery of the September 6th, who were six people who published about polygamy, polyandry, and Joseph Smith having multiple wives, who were all disciplined to the highest extreme, and some of them were excommunicated. And this was in the early 90s. This was in the modern era. This was in an age of enlightenment. They were excommunicated for telling the truth, because the church knew about these things. They knew that it had happened. They had the records. They had the reasons. And they still excommunicated them because they didn't think it was helpful. They excommunicated people for the truth. And that was the day that I went, "You tell me that you are the fullness of the gospel. You tell me that everything the prophets say is infallible. You tell me that this is the only way to God. And yet, for speaking out in the pursuit of truth and in the pursuit of the gospel being completely transparent to the nations, you will kick people out. You will ostracize them. You will tell them that they have no testimony." I could not reconcile myself to a church that played with smoke and mirrors to make itself seem better in an age where the truth is coming forwards, in an age where there is nowhere to hide anymore. The early 90s, and more information was still available. Like, it's now 2020, like, you can find out absolutely anything. And the last 5 years have had me almost on my knees begging for some of the things that I found to not be true. because I do still believe in God. I do still believe in my Saviour. I do still believe that there is a greater force in the universe who I choose to acknowledge as God influencing my life. But I don't think that in any way, the way that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I don't think in any way, the way that they've approached it, the way that they have presented what they call the truth, or presented things that they have done in the pursuit of truth, I don't think that any of it is divinely inspired anymore. I believe that it is solely for gain and solely for want of a less dramatic phrase, it is for control. Because I've spent 5 years, as I said in the introduction, I've recently got married. My husband is not a Mormon. He is, by his own admission, an atheist. He has sat and talked over the church with me and has said that it seems nothing but a set of controls so that people are dependent upon the church, and finding in myself that I have had to break that dependence. I have still had to question, am I doing these things because it is my choice or because I am programmed at this point to think so, that it is such a small thing. But it took me years to break wearing a vest top underneath clothes, because we were told in Young Women's that we had to wear underclothes to A, get used to garments, and B, to protect modesty, because it was our responsibility to see that we were not influencing others. It took me 5 years after leaving the church to be able to break that habit, because it had been so ingrained. And I just can't see any kind of truth in a church that prizes whether I'm wearing a vest underneath. It prizes teaching that as opposed to teaching that its founder had over 40 wives. I cannot put any faith or hold any respect to a church that has morals that are that messed up. And sorry, that went a bit ranty. I do apologise. But yes, that is the end of mine. Thanks.
So a question to all the panellists, really, and if anyone's got an answer, put your hand up. It's around the American-centric focus of the church. You know, us as Brits, you know, how does that affect us? Do we even notice it? And is it a separate kind of Mormonism? Certainly for me, I think the attraction of the American missionaries was a big factor in my early years as a family. So does anyone got a thought to that around the American? Yep, go on, Lauren.
I love that about an hour ago I said to you I was really nervous on this, but now I'm like, no, I'm in my stride, let's go. Hugely so, because it seems to be that the American focus of the church is that, yes, women, go and get your education, cool. Then prepare to be a wife and a mother, prepare to be a supporting influence, to be, in the most simple terms, to be the little wife at home. And the UK approach is so different to that. Like, girls go through sixth form and school here to be told, what would you like to do at university? What would you like to do with your lives? I am married now, but none of my focus was ever to get married. I was raised by an incredibly strong mother to do whatever I wanted to do with my life. And it just seemed to be that the ideal American family with, I don't know, 7.5 children and the perfect house and to be at home, to be a mother in Zion, was the only thing that we heard. To have a church so focused around American ideals in a country like Britain, which in my personal opinion is a much more liberated country, we are much freer to pursue what we would like to do, that to have those ideals ascribed through the church and in every aspect of my life was something that I struggled with. And out of 10 of the girls that I grew up with in YSA, I think 6 of us have left now, because we were told that that motherhood and wifedom, I cannot think what the word for that is, motherhood and being a wife and essentially like raising our homes to be Zion was the only thing that we should ever focus on. And we had such larger ideals that were denounced because the church needed us to be this picture perfect generation. And that's wherein I struggled the most with the Americanization of the church, trying to relate it to our culture where this is Britain, we are much freer, let me be what I want to be. I don't want to fit into your ideal.
Deborah Edwards, you had a comment on this as well, I think, and then Deborah Coleman.
I see most of the leaders of the church as probably Republican. That's my take on their political views anyway. And I think that obviously will feed into the doctrine or policies, really, because we all come with our own biases and our own beliefs. And that's natural. But I think, you know, we are a more socialist community in the UK and in Europe. And I think that causes some conflict. So when you're living in a conservative Republican world in the church, but the world outside the church is socialist, and that brings its own, as I said, its own difficulties and conflicts.
Okay, I think we've got Deborah back now. Yeah, so you're going to respond to the American question?
I was the one, the sister in the ward, who was working full-time or part-time. I was the one who was encouraging our young women to get careers, to go to university. And I was also the one who would encourage stay-at-home mums if they could do so, because I personally found that very beneficial to our family. So I was I always think that perhaps was a bit of an enigma, or other women didn't quite see me differently. I don't know. That's how I always viewed myself. But outside of the church, with other women, I felt totally myself. And although it may seem as a bit quirky because of my beliefs, but to me, it was all part of building the kingdom. So American-centric, definitely. And I think it's got worse, definitely. There's always a big thing for people to go and live in the States. And I have visited Utah, it's beautiful. There's always this big thing for people to go to live over there, marry Americans, lots of American missionaries. But luckily, I could see through that as well. So I think it's good to have our own identity, keep that kind of culture of tolerance and acceptance of all beliefs and genders.